as you know, Ryan, I would never say I was the greatest or best marketeer in the world. But yeah. There are a lot of things I feel you can do, even if you're not the greatest or best marketeer in the world, you can do as basics in your practice.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Practice Growth Summit. We are super excited to have our next guest here. He's a giant in the profession. We literally call him the Braveheart of chiropractic. He's based in Scotland. He's the president of the Scottish Chiropractic Association and founder of the soon-to-open Scottish College, Chiropractic College, which is really, really exciting. And what most people don't know, they see all the stuff that he's doing, but he's got an incredible practice. I personally have gone there just to spend time in his practice to see it. So I'm obviously speaking about Dr. Ross McDonald. Welcome, Ross.
Nice to see you, Ryan. Good to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
You're so welcome. So listen, first of all, you know, this summit's more about, you know, growing your practice and being abundant. And I think as a profession, if we can be more abundant, serve more people, then both us as personally as practice owners can be more abundant. We will also help, you know, more people in our community. So tell us a little bit about how you got into chiropractic and how long you've been practicing for, and where did you set up your first practice, and what was it like in the beginning? So we can know a little bit about Dr. Ross McDonald when he first opened his first practice.
Sure. Well, it's nearly 23 years since I graduated as a chiropractor. So I graduated from ACC down in Bournemouth. And I, my first experience as a chiropractic as a chiropractic patient was at 9 days old. So my mum had had a fall when she was a student in, on the hills in Edinburgh, so Arthur Seat and Salisbury Crags, and she'd slipped, fractured her coccyx, and was told at the time, well, you know, within 6 months you'll be in a wheelchair, you'll never be able to walk, etc., etc., etc. And she was recommended to go to a chiropractor in town at that time called Leslie White, John Leslie White, Dr. White, who set up the original chiropractic clinic, the White Clinic in Edinburgh in 1924. So my mum went along, obviously, exceptionally regularly to see Dr. White, and really the story of our chiropractic story started from there. So mum would swear by chiropractors, going to see chiropractor, that was who she would go if anything, you know, ear infections, headaches, you know, anything, that she would go along and see the chiropractor. And of course, she met my dad. My dad was a very good sportsman. And of course, he would never go along and see a quack, never go along and see a chiropractor, until the story goes, although I wasn't obviously there, the story goes that on the night of their wedding, my dad hurt his back and had to spend the night sleeping in, upright in the car. So my mum dragged him off for his honeymoon to see the chiropractor on the Monday morning. So that was how my dad started to, you know, getting in to see the chiropractor. And of course, I was then taken along to be checked regularly. And then I got the interest when I was about 5 or 6. I asked my chiropractor at the time, what do you have to do to be a chiropractor? And it started from there. So I knew very early that that's what I wanted to do and what I wanted to be. And when I was kind of 12, 13, 14 and starting to play international level sport, I could see the benefits I had of, you know, not having those niggling, repetitive, recurrent kind of injuries. You know, I would see the chiropractor at the beginning of the week and the end of the week, you know, pre-competition, post-competition. And, you know, really the kind of interest for me changed from just a kind of, you know, pain management, you know, helping my mom's headaches or helping quality of life, or to actually performance, to, you know, being able to perform at one's best, to be able to, you know, rock up with a clear head for exams, to be able to, you know, perform on my best on a sporting field. So really, by the time I was 17 and leaving school, I was heading straight down to ACC, and I graduated at 21 and came back up to work in White Clinic in Edinburgh, and was there for 11 years before, by that stage, I'd done a lot of travelling, both at, you know, speaking at conferences, and kind of my research interest was migraine headaches. And then I started to work with the South African rugby team and do a lot of kind of work with professional sports teams. So I worked with the Springboks from 96 to 2003 and kind of traveled the globe working with them. And after that, I'd met Beck, and we were settling down, having a family, and then we started our own practice in 2007. So kind of been working with Beck and various associates over the years in our own practice. So that's really where my story's kind of evolved. And obviously through those different roles, I've ended up taking kind of different, I suppose, leadership roles in the profession as we've kind of progressed onwards and upwards over the years. And I truly believe that it's incumbent on us as chiropractors, particularly those who are doing well and being successful in practice, to put back into the profession. Hence, I've taken on some of the roles that I do in the profession. You know, so.
Very nice. So you then, it was interesting actually, a couple of things I wanted to talk to you about today. One was, you know, from a practice building perspective, you know, what were some of the things that worked for you and have been stalwarts for you in your career? something that you've, you know, you would say, you know, if I really look back, I've always done this, and that has been a bit of a banker for me, or low-hanging fruit. It's always helped build my practice. That's one thing I want to ask about. And the next thing, once you've asked that question, just to give you a little lead in here, is there's many people that listen to this that are very interested in going the sports route. But what's so interesting about that is I would love to know your take on that. You know, what would you recommend to someone to, you know, how do you get even started in that world, to be in professional sports world? So those two questions I'll put it to you now. So what's been something that's constantly...
Okay, so as you know, Ryan, I would never say I was the greatest or best marketeer in the world. Yeah. But a lot of things I feel you can do, even if you're not the greatest or best marketeer in the world, you can do as basics in your practice. Yes. I mean, I always do a follow-up phone call after a first adjustment.
Nice.
Always, you know. I think people don't expect you to phone up and follow up. And, you know, and it might just be touching base with them. You might just be giving them a little bit of reassurance, answering a couple of questions. But actually, it's actually knowing for them that you're there for them. Nice. You know, you're actually a presence who's there, who actually cares for how they are or who they are as a person, as opposed to just somebody who's lying on your bench, you know, once, twice, two, three times, four times a week or whatever it is. So I think I always do that. I think that's really important. I always think it's important I keep a real tight check on my practice, where my patients are, who's cancelled appointments, have they got a rescheduled appointment in, you know, just a kind of tight, I would call it a kind of a purging process. You know, you're making sure your files are always either open, active, or closed, you know. So you know, there's never anybody there that's, you know, oh, what's happened to Mrs. Jones? Well, we haven't had any contact with Mrs. Jones. It may well be that Mrs. Jones decided to stop her care, and that's absolutely fine. But, you know, you've got to have a closing aspect to that part of care. And I think when you're doing that, you've got to make sure that it's comfortable and open for that patient. If they so wish, they feel comfortable to come back to your practice later on in the future as well. So I think making sure you've got that kind of nice, soft close, the patient's comfortable.
Yeah.
Either continuing the care, but also comfortable in saying, well, actually, your care served my purpose at the moment. You know, yeah. I'm happy, but I feel comfortable coming back to your practice. So I think those things are quite important to me. I also think a proper report of findings, I think, is really important. I think, you know, one of the things that patients always comment on when they come into our practice is actually we will sit down and discuss with them what's going to happen in their care. So, you know, I always look at the kind of key questions. You know, you've got to make sure you answer what's wrong with them, because sometimes they haven't been told that and you're the last resort. What are you going to do to help? How long it might take? And, you know, some people talk about the next question is how much will it cost? But I also like to talk about what the patient can do to help themselves.
Got it.
Because I think, you know, if you start, I like to look at chiropractic as being a salutogenic model of health. So we're looking at that kind of, you know, health coming from within and getting the patient actively involved in their own healthcare and taking charge of their own health, as opposed to being a passive kind of bystander to this pathogenic model of sickness care and disease care. So if you're going to do that, you've got to give them that understanding of what's happening, but also talk to them in that coachee model of care about how you can work together to help them get on top of their care, on top of their health, as opposed to being a, you know, actually I'm relying on you, the chiropractor, to play God and do the health. So I think that kind of taking time to do that report of findings, ideally with somebody else in there who's going to be their immediate nearest dearest support person for that. But obviously sometimes that doesn't work and some can't get that timetabled in, but trying to get, you know, that support network in there as well for the patient as they go, you know, starting on that journey of care. Partly because it's totally different to what they're used to usually when they come in. They're used to going in to see the GP and getting given something that they take, you know, relatively passively, and they don't have to take an active role in their care. So I think kind of explaining that different kind of model of health and what you're trying to do and how you're trying to get them to help themselves is really important. You
know? Okay, very nice. What's very interesting is that in all these interviews we've done, there's been something like that someone's mentioned, which is totally achievable, totally doable. But the key for me is how many years you've been doing. But how many years have you been doing that phone call for?
Oh, now 20. I was drilled into me when I first started in practice, so nearly 23 years. So.
But here's the thing, is like, you know, that I truly believe that secret to success is sometimes the success is boring, right? It's not about doing, sometimes it's not about doing the fancy, flashy things. It's about doing the discipline to phone every single person, first adjustment call for 20 something years, that, you know, every single interview I've done has been something simple like that, where it's like, it's totally doable. It's simple. It's not easy. So how do you hold yourself accountable to have the discipline to do something like that? Is it your team reminding you? Tell me about that.
Team remind me, and I'm a great one for lists. So I've got a checklist of things that I have to do every day. You know, before I leave the practice, before I close, there's things that I just have to do. Just as much as it is, you know, making sure you stick the alarm on before you go out the front door. Yeah. These are things I've got to do before I switch the lights off every day, you know. And I think it's, you know, before I came out today, I worked half day this morning in practice. I did my phone calls before I came out, you know. So, you know, it's just part of that care. And I think for patients coming into your practice as a chiropractor, you know, we are different. We are caring personalities. We want to do something different and empower patients to take charge of their health. And I think that is all part of that care package, so we call it, you know. It doesn't just happen when the patient's on the bench and you're doing, you know, delivering your adjustment and adjusting that subluxation. It's happening, you know, throughout their life. Chiropractic doesn't just start and finish for that patient when they're in. They've got to understand that it's a, you know, that we are there to care for them and to help them along their journey to health.
Very nice. But you spoke about checklists, and you also spoke about knowing, you said you spoke about knowing your numbers, like about you knowing where everyone is, or knowing like who's where or what files or whatever. So what are some of the, I mean, when talk me through some of, like, if it's just two or three checklists that every practice should have.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things we do is we do a weekly purging list. So, you know, the purging list is basically just putting off who's inactive, who doesn't have an appointment booked in. Now, there may be a story, or maybe it's somebody's cancelled because there's been, you know, something happening in the family. But we'll, you know, we'll discuss that at a team meeting on a Monday. So we have a team meeting every Monday lunchtime. We'll discuss these things because sometimes it's been one of the CAs that's maybe taken the phone call, but that information has maybe not been passed around the rest of the team. So, you know, if another one of the CAs is phoning up Mrs. Jones because they missed an appointment, but actually she's cancelled her appointment because, you know, her husband's passed away, you need to know that information. So I think that open line of communication between your CAs and your chiropractors is really important. So there's one of the things that we do. I'm a strict one for just knowing my practice. I know my practice, you know, 4, 6, 8 weeks in advance, who's coming in, who's coming in, what, you know, and I suppose I also have learned over the years to take little notes, little key points about what's happening in their lives as well. Nice. You know, so you know, it's amazing the number, and you know, you'll have had this as well, Ryan. Other people know as well. They'll do their own thing with this, but it's actually those little reminders about, you know, things like a golden wedding anniversary or a, you know, just little things like that that make a difference. If you can say, "Oh, Mrs. Jones, how was your golden wedding last weekend? Did you have a lovely day? It was a beautiful," you know, just little things that make them know that you care for them as a person. As a human, as a human being, as opposed to just a patient who's lying on your bench. Yeah. So there's little things like that. We've got a little checklist and a little diary list that we kind of, you know, have up that, you know, our ladies know that, you know, if there's a big anniversary coming up, you know, flowers will get sent off. We send out birthday cards. We, you know, particularly, you know, some of our elderly patients who we know live on their own, you know, we might, you know, drop off a little, I don't know, a little hamper or a little something for them, you know, if they've got a big birthday coming up, you know that, you know, maybe not got somebody special to share that day with. You know, just little things make them realize that they're part of our community, our chiropractic community, and we care for them, whether they're actively coming in for their care or not, you know.
You know, it's very interesting, Russ, I recently read a book called Peak by Chip Connolly, and it's just speaking about the customer experience and the peak, you know, you talk about Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Yeah. In the customer experience, the peak of the customer experience is surprise. Like being surprised on your anniversary or the, hey, I remembered it was those little things you're talking about now. So that's really interesting. You've systematized it in some way, shape or form to create those surprises within a customer journey. Okay.
That's right. And one of the ways to do it is got a great team. So my team take charge of that. I don't have time to do that. When I'm in the practice, particularly during adjusting time, it's about adjusting. It's about me focusing on patients, not me focusing on signing birthday cards or, you know, sending out, you know, flowers or whatever else, you know. So I empower the team to do that as well. You know, they might run something past and say, okay, are you okay for me to send this out to so-and-so? Absolutely. Or Beck will sign something off as well, you know. But we leave them to do it. We trust and empower them to do it. Because again, I suppose, it comes down to that old saying about dollar productive behavior. You know, what we have to do is concentrate on what we're expert at. We're experts at assessing, detecting, correcting the subluxation, adjusting the subluxation, adjusting the patients that come into in through our practice. Whereas our CAs, our experts, are doing other things, and they're absolutely trained up to be able to do all these other things that we don't need to concentrate on doing. You know, so it allows us to be focused on our patients. You know, service. You know, so.
I think, I guess, often we speak about this in my inner circle group, is the less you do as the doc, the busier you'll get. And by less, I mean, the more specific you are, the thing that you do, the adjust, the detect, analyze, and correct.
Everything else is cluttered. That's right. Everything else is cluttered. I always talk, particularly when we get new graduates coming to work for us, I always talk about, you know, in the middle of a shift, the CAs are the bosses. They run my practice. They run my practice. I do. If they say jump, I say how high. You know, if they say you're in this room, I move to that room. You know, if I'm moving from, you know, room to room and then suddenly I'm up the back of the clinic doing an examination, I follow their lead. You know, at the end of that shift, when the shift's all finished, then I might revert back to that kind of management type or entrepreneurial type kind of role. But, you know, during that that kind of shift, I'm really the technician. I'm delivering the adjustment. I'm not, you know, the boss or the leader. I'm the one who's actually just, you know, going in and doing what I need to do and focusing on that.
Very cool. Very cool. Listen, there's absolute gold in that. If you just took one of those little habits that Ross does in his practice, I promise you will grow. And Ross, what's very interesting is you have you've served at the highest level and from a chiropractic sports perspective internationally. I mean, I've seen you running between two international teams and the same. You just happen to be, I'm a South African and my rugby team. So you win a lot of favor from me there. But I just wanted to ask you, like, so if for someone watching this right now, tell us about that journey and like, how do you even get into that world? Because actually one of our summit interviews is also Alex Madan, and Alex works on the professional baseball team.
Oh, that's right.
So tell us a little bit about, you know, I'm interested in hearing your perspective. If someone wants to go that route, what's the one thing you could say to them that they have to at least be doing?
So for me, it was luck, really. Yeah. I played international level sport, played squash, but I also knew a lot of the rugby guys. So a lot of the guys who were coming through played for Scotland at rugby at that time. When I graduated, I'd grown up with them either in around schools, or I'd played against them at rugby, or played against them a variety of different sports. So I knew quite a few of them. So when I graduated, I started to see a lot of the players coming to see me. But it was kind of, I suppose, off the record. It wasn't officially through the SRU. So when the Springboks came over to play Scotland, they'd asked for a chiropractor. So they phoned up the SRU. The SRU said, you know, we don't use anybody specifically, but we know that a lot of the guys going to see, you know, this guy. So that's how it started. I looked after, I think, three or four of the box. And then they were playing England the next weekend down in Twickenham. So I went down to England and did a little bit of work then. And then we shook hands. And the time before emails and internet was fashionable, we shook hands and said, you know, they'd give me a phone next year for the European tour the next year. And in the February, they phoned me up and said, oh, the guys really liked kind of working with you. Would you like to come out to George to the Springbok camp before the British Lions tour in 97? So I said, checked with my boss and said, fine, bearing in mind, I'm only 6 months in practice at this time.
Wow.
So the next thing, I get flown first class out to George for 3 weeks down in a camp to prepare to work for the Springboks against the British Lions in the 97, you know, tour. So really it started like that. I mean, you know, I was then maybe, you know, for the Tri-Nations as it was at that time, doing 4 days in Scotland, 3 days in South Africa, 4 days in Scotland, 10 days in Australia, New Zealand. So, you know, you were doing a lot of work and a lot of travel, but, you know, 21, 22, 23, 24, it was a fantastic life. And I really enjoyed it, and I love my rugby anyway. But the thing I would say about working with sports is I think you've got to be really careful that you don't compromise what you do as a chiropractor. Yeah. So one of the best things that happened when I was working in that kind of environment with the Springboks was I was working as a chiropractor, not trying to be a multidisciplinary physician within that, you know, and try and be a jack of all trades and deal with everything from stitches to whatever else. You know, I was a chiropractor. They had two physios there. They had the team doctor. They had the, you know, masseurs there, and everybody had their role. So, you know, mostly what would happen would be the guys would come in, I'd assess them, adjust them if necessary, and then they'd see the, you know, the physio or the masseur after that. But they'd come in and get their chiropractic checkup first and then go and see everybody else after that. And I think, you know, if you're concentrating on just doing your chiropractic side of things, then I think, you know, you definitely serve, you know, your purpose is better served when you get to that kind of level. You don't have to do the physio thing because usually there's a good physio working with these teams anyway. You don't have to do the massage side of thing because usually there's a good masseur working with these teams, you know, at that level. And if we concentrate on being chiropractors, I think we get on, you know, a lot better when it comes to the kind of teamwork. And that to me is true multidisciplinary practice, you know. When you're working, everybody knows their role within that team and that kind of communication. I have done the roles where I've been the only kind of so-called medical person, you know, for a whole tournament in European Championship basketball in Malta, you know, and ended up resetting, you know, dislocated elbows and shoulders on, you know, 19-year-old females and males. But, you know, I've done all that as well. But, you know, I find just the chiropractic side of things fulfilling and stimulating for me, you know, so.
A bit of a kind of analogy, whether it's in the sports world or in our practices, right?
Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
Just focus on the thing we do.
And I think if you do that, you do it and you do it well. I mean, the players have trust in you then as well, because a lot of the things that we do, quite amazing. You know, if you're doing, for example, if you're doing a muscle test on a 23-year-old prop forward, and you go to do a muscle test on this player, and he thinks that, you know, oh, who's this little pipsqueak, and, you know, and you just press something and his arm goes really, really weak, and you say, oh, wouldn't mind tackling you today, you know, they try it again. Okay, well, what about if we do this? And suddenly it's strong. You know, these guys feel it, you know, because part of it is an ego thing as well, you know.
Yeah.
If they're bench pressing, as we used to do with the box, you know, they'd be in the gym and doing the bench presses, and then you'd, you know, check their upper cervical, adjust their upper cervical if required, and then all of a sudden they're putting another 20 or 30 kilos on the bench press. That means something to them. They're actually thinking, well, this is about performance now, because if I'm more in balance, more in tune, my body's working, you know, more synchronously from side to side, that's going to impact on me from an injury prevention side of things, but also from a performance side of things. And that's what these really elite athletes are looking at, you know. I look at when we're looking at sports, I look at, for example, my son Hamish. So Hamish is now he pistol shoots. He's 13, he pistol shoots, and he's in the Great Britain squad for pistol shooting. So if he's practicing, and when you look at when he shoots in the targets, he knows when he needs to get it checked and adjusted, because his centering on his target starts to spread out. And he'll get my wife right to check him, and if he gets adjusted, he'll go back in, and you can see his target coming right back into towards the bull again. And there's no randomized controlled trial that says, by the way, that's going to improve his performance. But he knows, and we've seen every time he gets checked, when he goes back on that range to shoot, his target is much tighter. And it's about, you know, as we all know, it's about that control. It's about that kind of, you know, input output through that nervous system, and how our body then is able to keep, you know, fulfilling that. And, you know, I take my hat off to all these, you know, specialist, you know, chiropractic neurologists and researchers that are looking into performance and how our body actually works, as opposed to just, you know, back pain, neck pain, because really that's where I see chiropractic making a difference over the next, you know.
And what a blessing to be in the position that you have to see such quick results, and it's like a randomized controlled trial for some of the stuff that you've seen. But I think what a blessing to put a certainty perspective as a young chiropractor to see pre and post, literally pre and post results, right?
That's right. And the interesting thing, of course, is he's been being checked regularly throughout his life. So, you know, for him to get that adjustment is maybe not as, you know, maybe not as much spectacular change as it might be for somebody who's never been adjusted before in their practice career, and then, you know, suddenly has that first adjustment, which, as we know, can be, you know, all-encompassing and all-powerful for somebody, you know, being on the bench, you know.
Very nice. Listen, Dr. Ross, thank you so much for all your time today. I would love to ask you, before we close off, I always say, you know, all these interviews like this, that all the docs talk about seemingly simple stuff that we could all do, and it's the discipline to do the phone call over 20 years, etc. But it works. It all works. It's just the discipline to do it over time. But I'd love just to close off, I'd love you to tell us a little bit about the college, and just give us a little bit about how we can support you, and just tell us a little about the college, where you're at, and how can the chiropractic community support you a bit when it comes to that venture. So it's in closing.
So obviously we're in the process of setting up a new Principal Chiropractic College in Scotland. At present, we are on target for opening in September 2020 and taking our first intake of students in September 2020. There's a lot of things to happen before then. Obviously, we're in the process of tertiary education, or the higher education validation of the degree program at the moment. And then we have to have accreditation with the regulatory board, which is the GCC in the UK. So we've got to go through that process. But, you know, we're getting everything in place to start that process. It's ongoing fundraising, obviously. You know, everything needs funds, you know, whether it's just securing premises. We've been gifted some land to build the college on, and obviously salaries, paying our salaries. We want to have, you know, the best teaching staff available and the best faculty available. So of course that comes at a cost as well. So there's always ongoing kind of fundraising activities, such as the Edinburgh lectures, such as our webinar series, the Hootenanny. So there's a few kind of initiatives that we can be involved with in that. We've just launched our search for our first president. So anybody watching this who's interested in being the first president of the Scotland College of Chiropractic, please get in touch. I'm sure Ryan will pass out my details for people to get in touch with me for that. So that's really exciting too, because, you know, this has been, you know, I suppose when you look at it, it's about, you know, our three children. One wants to, you know, fly the planes for the Royal Air Force. One wants to play football with Lionel Messi, and the other one wants to be a holistic vet. So not one of them at the moment wants to be a chiropractor. But we all know the benefit and the value of having a chiropractor care. So my question then to everybody is, who's going to take care of them in the future? Who's going to give them a chiropractor care in the future? Who's going to take care of their kids and their kids' kids? You know, if there's not a chiropractor in the family from our family going forward. So my legacy really to the profession and hopefully ultimately to humanity is we start creating legions and growth in the chiropractic profession so we can actually start really serving in our communities. And as we start to grow and develop the chiropractic college and start to create that chiropractic community and that healthcare, then hopefully we can start actually having impact, because that's really ultimately what it's about. Chiropractic is about having impact and changing lives. And I don't say that kind of flippantly. I'm talking about, you know, changing, you know, from, you know, Mrs. Jones who can't bend forward to lift up her granddaughter to be able to, you know, go walking down the street and take her granddaughter for a walk in the park, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's about. So this thing called chiropractic is really powerful. And to be able to take that forward, we need to start graduating chiropractors that understand that and understand the principles and practices so they can also take it forward and grow our profession in the future. But the question I would like to look at is really, you know, we're nearly 125 years down since the first chiropractic adjustment. Where's the profession going to be in 125 years? And the decisions that we make is going to impact where that profession goes. Yeah. So one of the decisions we made is that, you know, we want to start, you know, developing and growing, you know, principled and chiropractors who are specific in the adjustment, understand how to assess patients and really are confident in what chiropractic is and what chiropractic does.
Dr. Ross, I truly believe that in my experience working with as many associates and practice owners as I have, I always say there's three things I believe make a great chiropractor. One is energy, two is certainty, and three is empathy. And whenever I talk with you, you've got all those three in absolute spades and buckets. And I thank you so much for your time today. Listen, thank guys, I hope you're sure you're taking notes. Please support Ross and his initiatives. He's an incredible guy, incredible college, and I truly believe the chiropractic is already in a better place because he's been on this planet and him and his wonderful wife, but with the legacy it will leave by supporting that. So we love and appreciate. I know you're such a busy man. Really appreciate your time. Thank you so much, Dr. Ross. If you guys want to get in touch with me or Ross, make sure you get in touch.
Thanks, Ryan.